Yeah, a couple of things about this. This is a poem that was, I thought was finished and then discovered it wasn't. And I'm still not sure if it's finished, but anyway. And there's a phrase and it's repeated, and it's just repeated because, in my opinion, it's a phrase that is common and fashionable. Should God love me, reminds me of my childhood. Anyway, it's called I Think I Love You Too Much. 5:15 a.m. Alone and forsaken, my heart full of holes, I'm cleaning my gun and 38 special in the blues chair. Right now, all that I have in the world are private investigations, fear and hatred and revenge, and all that matters is she's gone. She's gone. Right now, our love is so far away, guilt tears like a six-blade knife, and I imagine broken bones in a secret place, a bewildered bluebird by the grave of two young lovers, victims of a storybook love, born to run on every street, ride across the river and mist-covered mountains to Romeo and Juliet heaven. Romeo and Juliet heaven, that's where I belong, where our love belongs. And once upon a time, yes, once upon a time in the West, in a place where we used to live, meeting you in my car, smooching hand in hand under the trees, down to the waterline, that wonderful land for laughs and jokes and drinks and smokes, the comfort and joy of the northern lights rolling on rocks and water, of love stretching out beyond my wildest dreams. She's gone. That wonderful land, she's gone. Boom. The tunnel of love like that. She's gone. Boom. Like that. It's over. Boom. Like that, sweet dreams fade to black, and I'm the fool with a heart full of holes, cleaning a 38 special, hoping time will end all sorrow. Boom.
Tobin Street, Cork. Walter Fitzwalter and Roger de Bristol lived here in two houses, one previously unknown. Amid risks and rain, they made a light, answered the bells. 15 feet below the cinema, the soil is darker than bitter chocolate, very moist, and we grow no useful fruits, like a rich pig, not nutritious. The slender spade of a friend digs as I make my way on the path above. We meet the director, see the artifacts, comb, coins, combs, pots, pins. The senses of old buildings are their concern, habitations in an old city, where coins show trade connections and distant kings. They probe the soil, and others prepare to be.
Thanks, Russ. Can we get Ali Bracken?
So I used to be able to write poems all the time when I was younger, as a, you know, adolescent. And then kind of stopped, and now I can only write a poem when it sort of completely takes me over. And I guess the esoteric word for it is a paroxysm, a sudden insurgence within you, sort of emotion of some sort, I guess. So a friend of mine died, a very close friend of mine, and I was in the kind of grappling of tears. This, it's called On the Dotage Face. In rapture leaks a fraction's peak of nothing we know on the dotage face. In captured dower the final hour with haughty woe on the dotage face. For liminal dwelling in divert swelling lists rancorous show on the dotage face. For seminal foil sits alone toil meets fickle flow on the dotage face. Uncarved riven eats fact and fiction, fantastical glow on the dotage face. A remedial shower yields a yielding flower with a colourblind crow on the dotage face. Unharking space shed unbound lace so little we know on the dotage face. For snark inflection substantiation such haughty woe on the dotage face. Zenith of meridian this zeal quotidian fells rancorous show on the dotage face. With hapless course an inspector force greets fickle flow on the dotage face. No kiss reception on lone deception prodigal glow on the dotage face. In dwell of hurry dwells dwelling scurry within a colourblind crow on a dotage face.
We have Frank Egan. We have quite a few to get through tonight, guys, so let's work together and get everybody.
Hello.
Yes, you don't know what to respond to that. This is a story I told about a, just a day in Paris, and someone in the audience suggested I bring it here. So if it's not suitable, then that's their fault, not mine. Okay, so this is just a day in Paris. I'm going to do a little extra because the whole thing is a 24-hour long stream of consciousness told, telling the story in real time. Okay, so at this point, all you've got to know is that I've just arrived in Paris. I'm trying to explore it, but I don't have a map because it was €1.10. So I don't have the map. Still, the best way to truly know a city is to let it unfold in front of you as you move through it like an intrepid explorer braving uncharted territory. Like a modern-day Columbus, I was to stroll through the paved, signposted streets of one of the world's most famous and populous tourist destinations. Hero is a word thrown about too lightly these days, but if ever a man merited the description, it was surely I. It was time to navigate Paris, I said to myself, in a whisper, so as not to attract the attention of the teenagers passing the bin I was crouched behind. I walked forward briskly, wondering what world-famous landmarks would lie in this arbitrarily chosen direction. Probably all of them, I thought, optimistically. Actually, I didn't really remember much landmarks. I tried to jog my memory of that 5 minutes last night where I was staying in the garage, where my garage's internet worked well enough for me to Google. I looked for the best Parisian landmarks. Knowing time was short, I worked quickly. My fingers were a blur as I hastily Googled Paris sights. My eyes grew wide at all the attractions. The tick, the leech, the hookworm. Okay, that was a joke that no one seems to get. I thought surely in this collection of poets it would work, but apparently not. Okay, doesn't matter. Yes, I was going to see them all at the Paris Museum of Ticks, Leeches and Hookworms. Also, if there was time, I'd try to squeeze in like the Lord or whatever. What? Oh, I don't know, or it's not important to the story at all. I will tell you that Paris, if you Google Paris sites too quickly, you will get parasites. So, it is brilliant, yes, thank you. This is more like it, this is the kind of reception I expect. Sorry, let me go on to anyway, I got on with the task of exploring Paris. I was disappointed to see a gaudy coin shelf gambling machine on one street, totally cheapening the rich history of this magnificent city, with its tacky lights, distorted electronic sound effects, and always looking like it was about to pay out, but never doing so, even after I dropped over 44 20-cent coins in the bastard. More bad luck was to follow. I could not enter the Paris Museum of Hookworms, Ticks, and Leeches, because it was only existed as part of a clever joke that no one gets about how parasites is similar to the word parasites. In a way, I should have expected the museum wasn't open because it didn't exist, but I was still disappointed. In fact, the more I thought about it, the more baffled I became. A major city like Paris not having a museum of hookworms, ticks, and leeches, and instead relying on three separate museums, one for hookworms, one for ticks, and one for leeches, all located miles from each other, with a train ticket between them all costing over €15. Who are the real parasites, I ask you? I don't know, having been deprived of an educational trip to these parasite museums, thanks to those parasites in Paris Rail. At €15 a ticket, you think they could afford to spray for pest control?
Please
make a 24-hour event for the whole Phillips Blan. Yeah, I'm supposed to follow that. I'm actually doing a project at the moment with Gabriella from Portugal. We're putting together a group of poems, both about where we come from, me from Ireland and her from Portugal, and we're translating them from between Portuguese and English, and we're hopefully going to publish them. So if you guys can help us out and give us contacts, it'd be much appreciated. Gabrielle has a bigger network than I do, but it'd be brilliant. And this is a poem I wrote about Ireland, and it's about the River Lee. And when I wrote it, I actually didn't realize how much of a relationship I actually had with such a river. Literally, whenever I go out for a cycle, I always think about what I'm going to do when I get to a park. Do I sit near the river? But never consider that's the River Lee, you know? I subconsciously have a relationship with it. I never realized this before. And that's until I wrote this poem. And literally all of this is about me subconsciously realizing my relationship with it. Lee. An aura fog just floats above its head, only transparent and weightless. Rather than sails, swans glide on the skin surface. Schooling sickened siblings. I tried to race the current, seen it try to walk the sky above. Catch a crane frozen as a plant. Its tarmac glistens before it vanishes because of salmon. I ducked over the railing, head upside down, to see the Lee's aspect of home. The right way up hills of Cork glisten away like constellations. Lee smudges the building lights, reminding me of Christmas. The river migrates, pushing under portals of bridges I'm sure to cross. I travel across it and back, every day, since my source, with it to college and against it to school. Seen it reclaim the Lee fields as its own, I even sat down as near as I could to she. Its passing, its sound, its fate and its path, I followed Lee my whole life, and never forget the faded petal. Thank you.
This is the year of commemorations and the Easter Rising, Battle of the Somme. Shakespeare died 400 years ago, and another man died 400 years ago, which didn't get as much attention. It was Hugh O'Neill, the Earl of Tyrone, also known as the Great O'Neill. He died in Rome in 1616, and he was the Irish chieftain who led the rebellion against the Tudors at the end of the 7th and the 16th century. And so this is a poem about the events surrounding the Battle of Kinsale. And the language is a bit dated, but I used the historical ballads from the 19th century as a sort of template, so it's not really contemporary as such. Old Corran's fields are dewy green, no echo of that martial scene. An army gathered on the ridge against the setting sun. They would fight and die beneath the southern sky in the battle fray, Christmas Day in the year 1601. For 7 years the war had raged, the country all one bloodied stage,
where widows cried and children died by famine's cruel claw. For where armies went, the mills and barns were burned, as the good queen best did her courtly best to impose Tudor law. But foreign help is on the main, from Castile's wide and dusty plains, the galleon sailed by Biscay through towering seas and gale, till with sails askew the old head is in view, and the band and stream is seen abeam, than the anchoret can sail. Now the eagles of the north have flown from Tyrconnell and proud Tyrone, a force marched south by swollen ford, through icy wintry hail, and through frozen pass from Cairn and Gallowglass, for they will not yield till they raise the siege of Mountjoy at Kinsale. No one can tell what went so wrong. Confusion reigned in the early dawn. The Irish horse are turned about, no battle but a rout. And like trampled weeds, the dead lay on the fields where the ravens fed and the mill wheel bled at the slaughter of Kinsale. They struggled north with banners low, where former friend has now turned foe. Allegiance granted everywhere to Tudor's blushing rose, and the chieftain's throne is now but shattered stone, and the harp is still on the sacred hill of ancient Tullyhoe. The O'Neill died in marbled Rome, far from the woods of royal Tyrone. O'Donnell sopped the poison cup in Philip's gilded Spain. But their deeds live on in folklore, verse and song, of that battle fray ere Christmas Day in the year 1601.
Some slip of the past and horses you, keeping in time at various competition, knowing who, why breakups suddenly explode, zipping past falls in a drooping forecast, sheltered from the rain, a prerequisite for anarchy. If we were drunk enough at times to make infinite mistakes over a weekend's eye, boasting over mistakes is not your prerogative, drowning medication a given fault. Navigating to others' houses that break well deserved, you should just go home before the disaster. Barricade past muster, fear of poison, at various coffee breaks, dreams not mentioning. Cruder the better, voices high-pitched again. Chance of concern fallen as of tears, rebuffed on speck, angled by care. Cities rolled through quiet, raucous peace, socialized with impunity and bloody blast. Mirror equalizes, a concrete merriment, hitting in the rain and an excuse to sleep. Sealing past drink and means of approval. Never realized, sinking for lost oblivion, hitting the superior a dire result.
Thank you. Whoa.
This is called body paint. Having no skill with a brush, I open up my voice box and apply these words with soft lips and a sharpened tongue. Nettles to tickle and sting your lower abdomen. A coloured dove set cooing in the red nest of your hair. Black slate fingernails. Wings torn off a dead gannet. A bank of ferns glistening in the sunlight. Shoulders round mountains lost in mist. An ocean that heaves to the rhythm of your breathing. The jagged chop of waves that crash against exposed ribs in blasts of spray and foam. Seashells swirling into points of sonic promiscuity. The blue horizon line peels like a sticker from the sky, cut in half and wrapped around black pupils. The pool of your mouth populated with little fish, anemones and shrimp. Muscles clinging to your teeth. The pink flush of your cheeks stained purple with the juice of overripe blackberries. Brambles drawn down your back, scratches that follow the lines of the muscle. Earth and root and rock, displaced cross sections hidden beneath the surface, gristle. Within each atom, the silvery suggestion of stars too distant to be seen. A coat of death at the end of the night to take you home and take you to bed. Split back into the seed and the egg. This language, being no tattoo, will leave no permanent mark. Body paint, transient as white beams of moonlight, fuchsia scattered in the dark.
Thanks, Michelle. This is about an individual who, at the beginning, was very timid and suddenly discovered hidden strength within himself. And I've used the framework of the Minotaur myth with Theseus, etc. It's called A Twist of Fate. Your voice, urbane, almost effete, held no hint of what you would become as you carried out your duty in the well-established mold. But the love that teased out Ariadne's tread drew your muse to guide you slowly down to twisted places in your secret self, seeding your dream time with distress, waking the lurking creature we all shun. Fearless you struck and grasped the thrashing horns, the dark beast fell and inner brightness blazed. A new beginning for a bitter end. Glad to leave the sickening stench of blood, you pulled yourself back to daylight, awake and reeling in your newfound power. No icy water now, you plunge into new life. No hard, savage joy leaving the Cretan shore. You cross the sea again.
Thank you. Weekend before last, myself and a band of intrepid poets, Max, Ben, Philip, Laura, and also 12 artists and a dog, tried to get to the Skellies, but the water was too dangerous. Yes, she didn't want us to get there this time, but we can ask again next year. Anyway, in the following poem, I based it on the Kerry Way, because we had lots of other adventures in those 3 days around the area. Now, there's a very small character in this poem. Just imagine a hyperactive chihuahua crossed with a Maltese princess dog. She's really tiny, she has gorgeous blonde hair like Ivanka Trump. And it's called the Kerry Way. Excited Amber, she smells the sea. White rollers in St. Finian's Bay. Ruined homes and mountain thrones. Water has its own beat, faster than land, you see. It's the pulses in the waves. In bad weather, you feel the elements past. Nature lives long, and we won't last. And I'm ruined by a cold, hot whiskey in a blanket old, and at night distress. Who forgets crab nets pinning down a turf roof, or the way islands are mountains, perilous and aloof.
Sorry now to get all a bit heavy on you. This is one of my more serious poems, and I just wrote it today, so it's still a bit raw. But I'll give you a go. It's called Who Owns the Dead? Who owns the dead? Do the kings and the presidents on their days of solemn pomp? When those who died in uniform are marched upon rhetorical objectives and are spent once more in the conquest of today's narrative. Once pressed, their service never ends. Who owns the dead? Is it the priest and his acolytes as they glide around coffins and shower incense everywhere as they make their stamp on proceedings? Centuries old, the whole of the ritual calculated for effect, dispatched to the kingdom of the faithful departed, ensouled for endless worship, once pressed, their service never ends. Who owns the dead? Are they owned by those who knew them best? Those who soldiered and sojourned life with them, taking the rough and the smooth as part of the bargain of knowing? Their grieving hearts who now know of feel absence, tempered but little by the joy of memory. Do they own the dead? Well, they have better claim than king, president, or priest. Thank you.
For the story, this one was inspired by my latest trip back to France, where I spent probably as much time driving as resting. And I saw also what I witnessed old people doing what we call reckless driving, and that was engaging about origami. For those who don't know, origami is the art of folding paper. It's the art of folding paper, but in Japanese, kami can be paper or can be God. So I ended up with this origami. I offended God today, I think, but he didn't get angry. If his face was in the sky, the clouds would be his brown forehead, a crumpled white layer, frustration pulled, and a bridge somewhere, covering a single bright eye, seeing little, lighting it instead. I had pushed my luck, I confess, confused a ton of steel into a few sheets of paper. Drunk on the devil's luck, I folded my hand early. He watched ever the poker face as I made the wrong bet. Between the car and the truck, flipped the wrong ace, met with a tree. Out of my four-wheeler of misfortune, I was welcomed by a silver lining. He was the only judge and enforcer for a decision as stupid as it gets. The nearby hedges were set ablaze, and for a second, the light I see. I accept the sentence like a blessing, a sunburn on the way home. I walk away from the unholy business of my destroyed pride, bent upon himself, turning my back on my godstruck heart, a flaming lesson of origami.
Can we get our 5-word challenge winner, Brennan Estrada, please? McCarthy, sorry.
She's gone.
Okay. That's okay.
No.
We have more. More O'Connor, please.
This is just a bit of technology. It's the extra brain. It's a bit here. A one called Dead Camp Survivors, home from a few years back. We, the rest of the world, stood by and watched the smoke from Auschwitz. The movie town news showed the walking dead. And we turned them away, only a handful allowed in the land of the brave, the home of the free, where the braves were held in reservations. We, the rest of the world, looked away as the Empire gave away the stolen land and left. We armed the dead camp survivors while they in turn erected their own barbed wire. We blessed the new state and never wondered how long it would take till the new camp festered and exploded like the rockets over Gaza. When the towers came crashing down, we wondered who would hate us enough to destroy our way of life. We sought weapons of mass destruction while the mass destruction of a people went unnoticed. Like the smoke from Auschwitz, we thought it would go away.
Okay. Bernadette Galler is not Bernadette McCarthy. They are two separate people, and I should learn that. Excuse me, Bernadette. Would you like to read now?
This poem was triggered by a competition, poetry competition in the UK, and the topic was roses, and I got intrigued by the topic, so and it was connected with the home of East Macro West. Rosa. Do not prune the roses, said Vita Sackville West. Strung together, let them grow to 4 feet at best. Dig the hole deep and fill with rotted waste, filtered by worms to our taste. Flowers, white, red, and colours in between decorate our food. The rose metamorphosed in Istanbul, bringing squares of pale pink tossed in ice to tempt my love until death cuts off a branch, dropping a single white flower below. Do not prune the roses, said Vita Sackville West. Thank you.
We have Kieran, and then we'll have Simon to finish up.
I never said I would be by your side for longer than I keep up. I never said I would be by your side for longer than I keep up. I can't keep up. I can't keep up anymore. And though I never said I would, you seem to think I always could. I thought that you understood that I can't do you any good. I never said I would be by your side for longer than I keep up. I never said I would be by your side for longer than I could keep up. I can't keep up, I can't keep up anymore. And though we have both known warmer days and hope for them to always stay, this is my price to pay. My love, I must be on my way. I never said I would be by your side for longer than I keep up. I never said I would be by your side for longer than I could keep up. I can't keep up, I can't keep up anymore. And as I walk out on my own, from new experience grow and blow, I miss the echo of your tone. Isn't life hard alone? I never said I would be by your side for longer than I keep up. I never said I would be by your side for longer than I could keep up. I can't keep up, I can't keep up anymore. Know that I have felt the road beneath my feet, felt one, step two, step three. I am still learning about me. I am still learning about me. I never said I would be by your side for longer than I keep up. I never said I would be by your side for longer than I could keep up. I can't keep up, I can't keep up anymore. And though I have tried, I just couldn't hide something that I need to be. And though I have tried, I just couldn't hide something that I need to be. I am still learning about me. I am still learning about me.
We're running late, so I think this is very short. It is called Complaint.
It's called
Shut Complaint.
Complaint.
Shut the window. Drop the shutters, mute the cries of ecstasy. The neighbours must not be disturbed.